Igeres HaTshuva, chapter 10. So just a quick station identification and a recap of what we learned last week. Tshuva Ilah, the higher form of tshuva, is not about resolve or regret, but rather it's about a person elevating themselves from their ordinary situation. And when we become more intensely devoted to Hashem, so that's a form of tshuva. Why is that a form of tshuva? What does it have to do with tshuva? Why is becoming more devoted? Why is that an act of undoing what happened in the past? So the answer is very simple. When a person behaves inappropriately, they distance themselves. And the question is not simply how you get away from being prosecuted for what went wrong, but the question is, do I undo the damage, or is the relationship irreparably going to suffer? And tshuva ilah is about not only, so to speak, getting forgiveness, but not only a person being able to break out of a bad cycle, but rather that as a result of where I was, I can be somewhere better. So it comes out of the negativity, but out of the negativity, a person raises themselves to a greater sense of cleaving, to a greater sense of oneness, to a greater sense of communion with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, the Alter Rebbe metaphorized, and he says, when a rope tears, and then the rope is repaired, so the area in where the repair took place is even stronger than the rope was to begin with. That's just a metaphor. And we invoke this notion of the connection between God and the Jewish people that's metaphorized as a cable and so on and so forth. There's a problem with this idea of tshuva ilah. And the problem with the idea of tshuva ilah, the way we described it in chapter 9, is that I didn't really change. I'm just doing extraordinary things. But I'm not extraordinary. I have remained the same person. But because I'm studying more Torah, and Torah is godly, because I'm doing more kindness, and that's godly. So as a result, I have been elevated practically and technically into a higher place, because I'm doing higher things. The question is it possible for me to actually change though? In other words, when you're going through the motions, when you're doing all of these things, you're in an exalted place because you're engaged with exalted things. But is it possible for me to actually change? Or is it just something which is under the influence of the environment or reality that I'm living in? So obviously I'm in a higher, a different place because I'm doing these things, but I really am the same person I was before. And that's a problem because Yiddishkeit wants the halah samata. Hashem wants us to change too. He doesn't just want us to go along with the flow. He wants us to start to swim differently. And that's what chapter 10 is about. So with that little preface, v'hine. Alter Rebbe says, tshuva ilah zu, this form of the loftier tshuva, the izdapkuso, the rucha berucha, in which the spirit cleaves to spirit, which is the terminology that we use, the parlance we use to describe the concept of tshuva ilah. And how does our spirit cleave to the spirit of the divine? Al yedei Torah, ugemilas chasadim, through involvement in Torah. Like we said, if you're used to studying one chapter or one page, now you're studying two chapters or two pages a day. If you're used to giving a certain amount of tzedakah or living in a generous way, you ratchet up that generosity and you take it to the next level. He bebechinas hamshacha milmaila lamata. All of that is about actualization or taking from a loftier place and bringing into a lower reality. Meaning, l'hiyeis dvar Hashem mamash b'fiv. When a Jew is studying Torah, so what's in your mouth? The answer is God's words. You're parroting over God's words. So if a person memorizes enormous swaths of very elegant speech, and he speaks eloquently, but he's not really eloquent, he just parrots over the lines. I learned the lines, and I know what to say. And because I learn the lines and know what to say, I'm very eloquent. Except if I happen to get asked a question that I didn't prepare for already, and I don't have the lines to say. There was a certain president who was excellent at reading teleprompters. And he did a phenomenal job at parroting over these carefully created lines and sentences. But then on the rare occasion when they would actually ask him a question that he didn't have a choreographed response for, he was just hemming and hawing because he didn't actually have anything to say. So he said a lot of smart things. He sounded highly intelligent. Maybe he is very intelligent, but he could not think on his feet. His gift was in reading over the lines. And because he read impressive lines, he sounded very impressive. The question is, was he really impressive? And that, the jury I think is out on that still. So the question here is, if I am simply repeating the words of the Torah, I'm studying Torah. So every waking moment I have, I'm studying Torah. I'm studying more Torah than I ever studied before. So whose words are in my mouth? God's words. If God's words are in my mouth, I'm engaged in something higher and holier. So practically speaking, I'm in a great place. The question is, did I change? And the answer is not really. I didn't change. I'm just going through the motions. I'm not doing bad things. Not only am I not doing bad things, I'm doing very good things. I'm involved in wonderful things. I'm speaking the words of Hashem, Dvar Hashem Mamash, which is great. But I didn't change. In other words, I have not elevated myself. I'm utilizing extraordinary things. I find myself in an extraordinary place. I have not become extraordinary. I'm still very ordinary. Now, you might argue, what's the difference? The person is so busy doing extraordinary things, factually and practically, they are living in an extraordinary way. That's true. The thing is that Hashem wants us to serve Him in both ways, namely, to reach for something higher and to bring it into our world, which is called Hamshacha, drawing down Milmaila from a higher place, Lamata. But at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also wants Hala, us to elevate Milmata Lamaila, that we should actually elevate ourselves. And that's not so simple. You see, when God gave the Jewish people the Torah, it says that He bent the heavens, proverbially, and brought the heavens down to earth. And then it says Moses, a mortal, went up the mountain and ascended the heavens. So you can ask yourself the simple question. Why was it necessary for Moses, the mortal, to go up to heaven if God could simply bring the heaven down to earth? If God brings heaven down to earth, so then Moses is in the heavens. Why did he have to, it was like almost like meeting him halfway. Moses had to come up the mountain and the heavens had to bend onto the mountain. And this way, Moses, a mortal, ascends heaven and God causes heaven to be felt and known and seen on earth. Like it says, they would be able to see the sounds. What does it mean to see the sounds? What does it mean to hear the sights? So it's a metaphor. It doesn't have to be literal. We don't even know what that means in a literal way. The Rebbe says, in a very simple sense, it means that things which are usually distant and heard about, like spiritual reality, became seen, became obvious. And things which are usually obvious, like the physical world, became distant, like something you hear about. So they were in a different state of consciousness. What was the problem? The problem was that when Mount Sinai was over, and when the thunder and lightning stopped, and when the shofar faded, what happened afterwards? 40 days later, they built a golden calf. Why? Because they didn't really change. So when they were in the middle of an extraordinary experience, they were extraordinary. And then there was maybe a spillover effect, but didn't last very long. What was the problem? They didn't change. They need to change. For it to be a lasting change, you need to change. Otherwise, I'm just going through the motions. And can I spend life going through the motions? Maybe. Will it run out at a certain point? Possibly. But even if it wouldn't run out, even if you could manage to keep doing this straight till the finish line, something has not been fully effective. The transformation that we're supposed to bring about hasn't fully happened because I didn't change. And Alter Rebbe didn't talk about that here. So regret and resolve is a change that I made. I regret doing something. I really regret it. I resolve to do differently. So if I regret this, I'm not going to do it again. Why? I used to be in one headspace where that's fine. I'm just going to do what I feel like doing. I'm going to do what I enjoy doing. And now I'm saying, no, I actually regret doing that. I feel really bad about doing that. And if I feel really bad about doing that, I've changed. I've come to realize that was a mistake. If I resolve not to do it again, I've changed. I used to do this. I'm not going to do it anymore. I was in a vicious cycle of addiction. I kept falling, tripping, slipping. I was harming my family. I was doing all these bad things. I said, I'm going to change. I'm going to get control of my life. I'm not doing that anymore. I changed. That's tshuva tatoa. That's the lower tshuva. So the lower tshuva most definitely affects change in my life. The question is the tshuva ilah change that we could believe in? So the answer is, well, it's change, but it's not really me. I'm learning a lot of Torah. That's great. I wasn't doing that before, and now I am. And it's because of the sin that I decided to study more Torah. That's wonderful. So my sin, instead of distancing me from God, actually became a catalyst for closeness to God. So and I'm doing more. It's a holistic kind of tshuva. I'm not just dealing with the issue and the negativity. I'm not just forswearing the bad behavior. I'm strengthening myself in my spiritual service. So I have the word of Hashem in my mouth. As Alter Rebbe calls it, Dvar Hashem Mamash Befiv, K'mesha Kosov, like it says in the Pasuk, V'asim Dvarei Beficha, a place, God says, my words in your mouth. And then there's this idea of tzedakah, which becomes the poster child for mitzvahs altogether. V'yaminoi, God's right hand, proverbially, Tichabkeni, embraces me. And this is the idea of Gemach, of Gemilas Chasadim, of being a diffuser for kindness. The Chesed Roi Yamina, as it says in Pasuk Eliyahu, that there's this description of divinity, obviously anthropomorphical, but in the anthropomorphical description of divinity, it says chesed, that kindness represents the right hand. So when I'm doing kindness, it's as if I become an embodiment of God's right hand, or an extension of God's right hand. And therefore, since I'm doing kindness, which is an act, a godly act, I'm providing for somebody who doesn't have, that is actually to be godlike. I'm going beyond the call of duty in being a kind person, a generous person, a compassionate person, one who is not only mindful of, but actually doing something for those who are more needy. So I become an extension of God's right hand. Avala adam atachten, but the lower person, the person down below, tzorech leilech madrega lemadrega, also has a keen need to go from level to level. Mimata, from the lowest of levels, lemaila, to be in a higher place. So the child is born, this most selfish creature on the face of earth is a baby. The baby knows of nobody else, nobody else's needs, nobody else's needs matter. The only thing that matters is me. That's what a child is, that's what a baby is. They're innocent, they don't know any better. They're not angelic. People use the term angelic, they're not really angelic. They're little monsters. They're cute little monsters, but they're little monsters. And they're focused only on self. I want now. The parents sleeping is irrelevant. When people are busy, that doesn't matter. I need, what do they need? Sometimes they need a diaper change. Sometimes they're feeling lonely. I need to be hugged. I need companionship. I don't like this, this pillow is not working for me. The blanket is not good enough for me. I need you to hold me. So what happens to this child? He starts to develop and to grow. And at some point, the child reaches a point of self-consciousness, becomes aware of a world around him, and sometimes doesn't get exactly what he wants. And then he makes this major paradigm shift when he's like 2.5 or 3, and he ends up in a nursery school in the classroom with all kids just like him, all of whom think that the sun and the moon and all of humanity revolves only around them. And then they find out, they get this rude awakening, no, you're not the only person in the world. You're not even the most important person in the world. Here's another 20 children who think they're equally important. And there's only 4 dollhouses, and there's 12 girls. And you can't all use it at the same time, right? So they wail and they weep for the loss of their independence and importance. And what happens? And then they develop, they become a mensch. That's going from one level to the next level. You learn how to share. And they actually learn to like it. And then they want play dates, and then they want to have friends. It's a cute thing. The child has just become social. Friends are so, oh, it's nice. They have friends. You get to share. And they learn. And hopefully the person keeps developing.
But they haven't changed. They've learned to modify their behavior. They squash the selfish part.
They do change to a certain degree. To a certain degree. We would be embarrassed to behave like a baby. Yeah. We would be embarrassed to have a temper tantrum. And we don't even think it's right that we should wake up the whole house at 3 o'clock in the morning because we need somebody to talk to right now. No normal adult says, oh, I'd like somebody to talk to now. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, dude. Yeah, but you know, I'm a little lonely now. Hello, everybody, turn all the lights on. We're gonna make everybody happy. You used to do that. You kind of realize that that's just not nice. It's not appropriate. You'd be embarrassed to do that. But you have to keep developing. So if a child develops from 2 years old to becoming a nice little child who shares at 5 years old, it's really nice for 5 years old. But if at 10 years old, the child is still doing exactly what they did at 5 years old, we have a problem. If your teenager is acting like a 3-year-old brat, first of all, welcome to reality. Mm. But you have a problem. That's a problem. That's an issue. So we have to keep developing. We're supposed to keep developing. We're supposed to become more selfless. We go from level to level. We're not the same people we were. We become parents. We learn about selflessness. Parenting is the most selfless thing anybody could do. It's also the most rewarding thing people could do. There's a selfish element to it, that when you have people who don't know about selflessness, and they, well, I need to go have fun now. Lady, you have a baby. Well, that's the baby's problem. I can't help it. There was this horrible story that years ago, it was in the media, that the woman decided she had to go dance. She had to go to the disco. She just left her baby. I don't remember what happened to the baby. It was like, that's crazy. They took away the child from the mother. They should. That's not normal. So the point is that you have to keep developing. You have to keep changing. We hope that in life we keep changing in a positive way. It doesn't always work that way. Sometimes we regress. Sometimes we go backwards in our behavior. But the goal of life is to keep changing. And this is what Hashem expects of us. He expects the Adam HaTachton, and He makes us in a very, very low, small, selfish way. And He says, now grow, now change, now develop. We have to go from Madrega to Madrega. And we have to be moving up. And this is Bechinas Tshuva Ilah. The same is also true with regard to the higher form of Tshuva, which is one of the highest forms of divine service and one of the loftiest ways that a person can express themselves. It's his Dabkes Rucha Berucha. It's a cleaving of spirit to spirit. Bekavanas Halev. This has to happen with intention of the heart. And where does this happen? This happens not with prayer, not with study, pardon me, not with kindness, but rather with the third pillar upon which the world stands. Torah, Avodah, not those, but Torah and Gimel Chasadim, but rather Avodah, the concept of prayer, the concept of having, nurturing an emotional relationship with God, because that's the nature of prayer. And the Rebbe says, Ubefrat b'krishma b'chaseh. This is especially true with regard to the blessings of Shema and the recitation of the Shema itself. Now, this is interesting, because usually prayer, the mainstay of prayer is the Amida. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, the parlance of Jewish law, when we say prayer, tefillah, we mean usually the Amida. That's the highest point. Here, the Rebbe says, no, especially Kriyashma, especially Birchaseh, especially the recitation of Shema, and the blessings that preceded. So the thing is like this. Prayer can be divided into two dimensions. On one hand, prayer is something called Bakoshas Tzrachav, asking for one's needs. In other words, understanding that I have to humble myself before God. Like we read in the Torah portion, that a person should not say, Koichim va'itzim yadi asali esachai lazeh. I am successful because I am smart, because I am capable, because I am focused, and that's why I'm successful. No, that's not what a person should say. A person should say, I am successful because God made me successful. I should recognize, ki hu ha'neisim l'cho koyach lasas chayel. God gives us the ability to do valor. So if God's giving me that ability, it means I have to ask Him for that. And on a simple level, the concept of bakasha sachav, of asking for your needs, is not that God needs you to ask for your needs. You need to ask for your needs. You need to be humbled. You need not to be obsessed with self. And the only way that'll happen is if you acknowledge that it comes from God. And the best way is not only after it happens where you say thank you, but before you get it, where you say, could you please give it to me? So that's one part of prayer. And that's the focus of the Amida. We make many requests. But there's another part of prayer, and that is to nurture an emotional connection to God. For us to be able to put ourselves into a different headspace. For us to be able to emote to God. For us to be able to speak to God in a way which is sincere and real. In a way which is profound. And that's an important part of prayer. Reciting the Shema is about a person being able to transcend their own little orbit and to reach a level of what we call Mesiras Nefesh, of total devotion, total commitment, total sacrifice. And that's why we have blessings before the recitation of the Shema. Like the Rashba asks the questions, why do you have like blessings, 2 pages of blessings before you do a mitzvah? You do any mitzvah, you say a bracha, it's like one liner. Here we have 2 pages. What's the 2 pages? He says the 2 pages is not because we need this is a bracha for the mitzvah. It's a euphemism when we say it's a bracha for the mitzvah. It's really a preparation for the mitzvah, the Alter Rebbe explains. It's in order for the Shema to be experienced properly, we have to have a whole preamble to the Shema. Because the Shema is about connecting to God. And prayer also means connection. So prayer also means communion. Prayer also means oneness. And there's a separate part of the prayer. Part of the prayer is asking for my needs. Part of the prayer is knowing that everything comes from God. Being mindful of that. And then there's a part of the prayer that's about feeling at one with God. Developing an emotional connection. Therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, when we talk about Tshuva Ilah, which Tshuva Ilah means, simply stated, a more intense engagement and involvement with Avodas Hashem as a result of the sin that happened. Because I behaved badly, that's why I'm going to pray with greater intensity. That's Tshuva Ilah. That's a loftier Tshuva. That's not emphasizing the negative. It's on the contrary, putting emphasis and underlining the positive. So I'm working really hard at serving Hashem with much greater fervor. And I'm doing it because of that I did things wrong. I'm trying to make up for what happened. I'm trying to make up for the missed opportunities. I'm trying to make up for the foolish moments in life. And when I do so in prayer, then I'm not just simply invoking, reading better lines, speaking eloquent things, even though prayer we read in the Siddur. But ultimately, it was just trying to identify what it says in the Siddur. When you learn Torah, it's not about how do you feel about this. I don't care how you feel about it. The question is, do you understand it? It's not about emotion as much as it's about the intellect. And the intellect, by and large, is objective rather than subjective. Who are we really? We are our emotions. I like this. I don't like that. I can understand things which are not in keeping with my Weltanschauung. I understand it. Why? Well, maybe I need to understand it. Maybe I need to understand my opponent if I'm going to be successful. Maybe to be a mensch, I need to understand those who don't agree with me. Okay, so I'll understand them. And that's actually an important part of achdus, of unity. Try to understand where somebody's coming from. So I'll try to understand. I don't relate to it. I can't say it makes sense to me, but I understand it cerebrally. At least I understand where you're coming from. That's not me though. It's almost like I'm divorcing it from myself. It's not who I am. My midos, the way I feel, the way I relate to somebody, that's me. I like that. I want that. I'm drawn after it. Or I really, really don't like that. It makes my skin crawl. I'm gonna run the other way. Because it touches me in a negative way. It impacts me. It makes me uncomfortable. So that's who I am. That's my midos. When I learn Torah, I'm not engaging my midos, I'm engaging my seichel, I'm engaging my mind. When I do kindness, I'm acting in a kind and compassionate way. I may not like what I'm doing. I may not like this, the giving and the engaging. It doesn't matter if I like that. When it comes to tzedakah, what's the most important thing? Giving. The recipient. So some people think there's this misguided notion that it you have to give till it hurts. And the more it hurts you, the better a gift it is. There are some faith systems that embrace that. Judaism doesn't. What's the highest form of tzedakah? Where it hurts you most? No. What's the highest form of tzedakah? Where the recipient preserved their dignity most. Mm-hmm. That's why the highest form of tzedakah is not to give any tzedakah at all. The highest form of tzedakah is to give a loan. Because when you gave a loan...
Or a job.
Or a job. You gave a loan or a job, you lost nothing. You gave a loan, you lost money you could have made. Theoretical money. You gave somebody a job, so you invested time and effort. You went out of your way. But in the end, you give a person lunch... You give him a fish, you fed him lunch. Teach him how to fish, you fed him for life. Mm-hmm. And then where is somebody's dignity intact? When they have to be a schlepper and take a handout? What is it called? A schnorrer? Mm-hmm. Say, okay, fine, I have no choice. I'm starving. I have to keep a roof over my head. Fine. Stick my hand out. Give me. Or when a person takes a loan. Rich people also take loans. I may have assets. I don't have liquidity. I need a loan. So it's not about how much I gave. It's about how did the person feel. Because tzedakah is always about the recipient, not the benefactor. But if it's not about the benefactor, and it's not about me giving till it hurt, then in the end, did I change when I gave tzedakah? Maybe not. I engaged in a righteous thing. The question with the tzedakah is, what was the end result? Was I an extension of God's proverbial right hand? But when it comes to davening, if I don't mean what I'm saying, if I'm just reading the words of the siddur, I miss the point of davening. Davening is a mindful experience. It's supposed to be a heartfelt experience. If it isn't mindful or heartfelt, it isn't davening. It may be reading words. A lot of people think that davening means you can read the words as fast as possible. Finish the siddur, turn the pages so quickly you create almost like, you know, like a, you don't need the air conditioning on because the pages are moving so fast. That's not what davening is. It's not what davening was meant to be. And therefore there's this notion that it doesn't matter how much you davened, it matters how you davened. Not how many words you said, but how you said those words. So the Alter Rebbe therefore now introduces us to the other form of tshuva ilah, and that is not Torah, not gemilas chasadim, but rather tefillah. And especially here is the like, kind of almost a counterintuitive emphasis, not on the amida, which is usually seen as the apogee of davening, but rather on the shema and its blessings leading up. Because that's where the deepest emotional part of the prayer is actually awakened. Kedeloimar, in order to say v'ahavta v'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha, in order to say you should love God with all your heart and all your soul v'chulu be'emes la'amitai, that's what the blessings of the Shema are about. So that when I say V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, I actually should feel V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha. But if it would be without what we would call the Birchas Krishma, I would never get to V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha. Those words wouldn't be real. So this is like what the preamble to Shema puts us in the right headspace, so when I actually say those words, which I'm biblically mandated to say, I'm not just going through a verbal exercise, I'm actually feeling it, I'm emoting it, I'm identifying with it. V'chein, similarly, v'hayu advarim ha'ela, these things should be. V'chulu, v'dibartabam, you speak in them. Li is dvar Hashem b'fiv, that the word of Hashem should be in your mouth. Be'emes, it should be in truth, that I should actually transcend myself and I should identify with the emes. And the emes is Torah. But I can study Torah in a way which is superficial. I can study Torah like an academic, or I can study Torah by identifying with the words of Torah, by becoming one with the words of Torah, by the Torah becoming an extension of me because I identify with this fully. That's a very different kind. And then ultimately, if somebody davens properly, not only is the Torah study different, but v'chein l'kiyum kol ha-mitzvos, when it comes to fulfilling mitzvahs, the mitzvahs are transformative experiences. K'mesh kosov, like it says, asher k'dishonu b'mitzvaysov, that God who has hallowed us with his mitzvahs. And how exactly does this work? How is a performing a mitzvah a transformative experience when, after all, a mitzvah is what we would call going through the motions? So this, Be'ezrat Hashem, will continue in the next class.
Thank you.